Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Illustration Department Podcast. My name is Giuseppe Castellano. In this podcast, I talk to folks in illustration, graphic design, publishing, animation, and other creative fields about their beginnings, their successes, and the bumps and bruises they've experienced along the way. In this episode, my guest is illustrator, author, and professor John Hendricks. What do an illustration practice, a religious practice, and baseball all have in common? To find some joy in any of them, you gotta have a little faith. Among other topics, John shares what lessons he learned from the early days of his illustration career. We examine how his faith intersects with his art and why he thinks God is dunking on him. And John and I talk a little baseball and its remarkable resemblance to illustration. I hope you enjoy our conversation. When I told Sarah, my wife, I was like, hey, guess who's going to be on the podcast? John Hendricks. Immediately, she was like, oh, yeah. Didn't we talk to him at the Society of Illustrators? It was like he was sitting with us and it was somebody else. And I think the other person was Jamie Zollers.
Oh, of course. Right. Yeah. That's hilarious. I totally remember that night now. You're so right.
Yeah.
She'd be great to have on this podcast. She's got a couple great projects coming out.
Who, my wife? Sarah?
Oh, I'm sorry. Jamie Zollers would be a great person to have on this podcast.
Yeah. Sorry. That was a bad dad joke. when I first learned about your existence, I think it was, I don't know, maybe social media or something. And I was just like, oh, yeah, there's that guy who draws in church and that work is great. And he has a cool last name. And that was kind of like, you know, I kind of knew that you were out there. And then we met at the Society for something. I don't remember. Maybe it was an original art show or something.
And yeah, that's probably what it was. Yeah.
We were on the third floor right in front of the bar, that corner table. You, Jamie Zollers, me, and my wife, Sarah.
That's great.
One memory from the, I think it was Austin specifically. You and I were both at this conference was you were giving a talk about drawing, I think. And you said, I think to the crowd, you said something like, I'm a professional drawer, not a professional drawer.
Yeah. It's because one of the very first media things that I ever got written about me was an article in the Lawrence Journal World. And it was the headline was drawer who paints. And it looks like a drawer that paints. And my friends, I was endlessly mocked for this headline. And so now my Twitter bio actually refers to that. It says professional drawer, not furniture. So yes, thank you for bringing up such a painful experience.
My pleasure. What led you to studying graphic design and illustration at the University of Kansas, of all places? I mean, why those fields? Why that school? Does Kansas have a good art department? I just don't know about it.
Yes, they have a very good design school, great illustration faculty there. I was just telling this to a student the other day that when I was in high school, I wanted to go to art school because I thought that's what it meant to be a professional. It's like you had to go to art school. And as I started actually visiting art schools, I just realized they were super depressing because they were so small. They were so insular in what I imagined college would be. Many times they didn't even have a campus, right?
Right.
And so when I visited the University of Kansas, which is, I'm from St. Louis, so it's, more or less in my backyard, about 5 hours away.
Okay.
I just was totally enthralled with campus life and football games and Frisbee on the quad and just a huge amount of students, just the life and energy of Lawrence is a wonderful town. So I just really fell in love with KU, and they had a great art school, some illustrators there that I really admired. And it was a great fit.
Like who? Who are some of these illustrators?
So Barry Fitzgerald is a faculty member that I have. He really, changed my life as a person who came in. I came into school knowing that I loved drawing, but really did not know. This seems crazy, but I did not know the category of illustration really existed. Like I knew comics. I saw that as a destination that had a vocation attached to it.
Right.
But even though I grew up, of course, reading books, illustrated picture books, and The Hobbit and David McCauley. I just had not, even as a high schooler, I had not connected illustration as a field of study. And I think I just thought that those were, I mean, those had to be almost like free pro bono projects because they were so like dream projects. It's embarrassing to actually say it out loud, but Barry Fitzgerald was a guy that, I mean, first illustration class, he said, "Well, I want you to buy the Society of Illustrators annual." I'd never heard of this organization. I still have it. Society of Illustrators 38. Mm-hmm. And I got it in the mail, and it was just this beautiful book, you know, big and thick, and the pages were so shiny, and yeah, the paper stock was thick. And I just remember flipping through it and realizing, like, oh, these are my people. Like, this is what I was meant to do. And from that moment on, illustration was the category of the world that I wanted to be a part of.
Right. So you graduated and you stuck around Kansas for a minute. What were you doing right after graduation?
After I did my 4-year program in illustration, and it was, you know, visual communication was the mm-hmm. category. Mm-hmm. I just loved type. I loved design. I wanted to stay in school. I loved school. I wanted to stay in school longer. So I stuck around another year and did the design track within visual communications, which was another year of classes. Mm-hmm. So I had kind of a design degree and an illustration degree after 5 years. And then my wife got a job in Lawrence as a campus minister with a campus ministry we were a part of. Mm-hmm. And then I started to work at a PR firm in Kansas City, and then later at a little boutique design agency in Lawrence. So we just kind of made a life there after school for a couple years before I hit rock bottom and just said, I need to go. I need to get out. I have to go to New York or I'm going to explode.
Literally my next question, what led you to New York? SVA?
Uh-huh. Yeah. I only applied to one graduate school because, I mean, this goes back to high school. I wanted to go to SVA for art school, but I was, because everything I knew about New York, I was kind of in love with,
right?
Which basically came from Seinfeld and Saturday Night Live. But as an 18-year-old, I was terrified of New York City. I was not ready. So when I applied to graduate school, it was there or nowhere to me. So I just applied to one school and, you know, I got in. And Andrea, my wife, does not remember this, but she was the person who told me to go back to graduate school. I was miserable in my job. I was working this PR job and, you know, it was truly like corporate hell, you know, for me. I think some people can thrive in those environments. And for me, it was extremely painful going to work every day.
What were some of your responsibilities at this PR firm?
Well, I was a designer. I was a junior designer. So I would do, you know, logo designs. I had a few clients, Ocean Spray and Hallmark and some agricultural clients. I just very vividly, and there was one experience I remember where I was asked to design a logo for an online bank. And my boss gave me this assignment. So I was super excited because I was the lead on this logo design. So I went home that night and I did like 15 sketches because, you know, in college, I was trained to iterate and to do versions of things.
Right.
And I came in the next day to the meeting and pinned up all, like 15 versions. And I was like, okay, we're going to have like a crit. And my boss was like, I mean, this is cool and all, but like, just do it. Or just like, right, do the one you like.
They're
and
like, I was why like, did you pin a bunch of paper to the wall, man?
I just thought my faculty have lied to me. Like, school is a lie. This is all a scam. And,
yeah,
you know, it just turns out that they were just interested in different things. They were, you know, billable hours, go to the next thing. But I was just more interested in the craft of it.
At SVA, I assume this is, what is it? Marshall Arisman's program? Visual communication as a, what the heck's that program called?
Illustration as visual essay.
There you go. What was the goal? Was there a goal?
I knew so little. This is also an embarrassing thing. But to me, it was like, go to the best program in the world. And that was in New York City, run by Marshall Arisman, guy that was a hero of mine. And like, I don't care what's in the program. I mean, truly, like, I looked at the classes, but I was like, it's all going to be cool, right? So, I mean, I got there and I was like, I remember the first orientation. I'm like, oh man, I hope these are going to be good classes. Because I didn't know what visual essay was. I mean, honestly, I don't even think I asked Marshall when I met with him before I applied what it was. I knew him. I knew the people that came out of that program, and I knew New York, and that's what I wanted. So, I was very green, and a ton of my aesthetics and my sensibilities and my the things that I enjoyed in illustration really changed in that program. And not because they told me what to enjoy, but they were able to allow me to see the stuff that was already there.
Right. I had two experiences with Marshall. One was over the phone, the first one. I too was thinking about going to graduate school. Thought, well, maybe SVA, do they have like a program where, full-time folks who work full-time can take it? The answer was no. But I called and the person who answered said, "Well, leave me your number and Marshall will call you back." And I was like, "Wait a minute. Art? SVA? Marshall? Marshall Arisman?" Like,
Not
yeah, okay.
Marshall Arisman. He's gonna
Yeah.
call me
It
back.
can't be Marshall. It's got to be Marshall Smith or somebody
Somebody
else.
else.
And yeah, the guy called me and we had a really great conversation. And he was talking to me like I was related to him or something, like giving me support and telling me I could do it. And, he suggested FIT, which is ultimately where I went. And it's just this really just lovely conversation. I hung up the phone going like, "Do I send him a card?" I mean, that was really nice of him to take that much time. And then fast forward several years later, he was inducted into the Hall of Fame at the society. And I was accepting the award on behalf of Beatrix Potter as the art director for Frederick Warren at the time. And
Oh,
so
that's great.
we kind of hung out and it was, I mean, to say it was a career highlight is to, admit that I have very little in terms of vocabulary to, command of the English language to sort of explain and describe what that feeling was like. But yeah.
I assumed that Marshall was going to be very scary
Me too.
before I met him,
Yeah.
because his work is terrifying.
Yeah.
Or I don't know, just kind of like, not maybe not scary, but like a big shot, or I don't know, just flexing his muscles. And in many ways, I have patterned my life as a chair of this graduate program after him, and that he is incredibly generous. He's incredibly available. There's nothing that is too like low for him to do, with you. And yeah, he's a very encouraging force. And so I think people underplay how, or maybe consider his teaching style as too benign, or but there are, I can pinpoint two or three moments that I had with him that were incredibly formative in the way that my work eventually went.
How did you become an art director at the New York Times? Was that during or right after?
It was during my
This
last
isn't a
semester.
judgment on your abilities. I'm just curious.
Oh no, it's 100% should be. I it, there are I mean people work their entire lives to end up at the New York Times as an art director, and I cannot explain it. I fell backwards into an incredibly lucky break. And I started as an intern while I was in my second year in grad school, because Stephen Garnacha was another student, had interned with him at the New York Times. That's when he was the art director there. And this was one of the real benefits of me having worked that terrible 2 years in PR, is like I knew how to use InDesign. I knew how to talk on the phone to clients. I knew how to lay out things. And I was also, I was learning to solve problems visually. And so that set of skills was what Stephen needed as an assistant. And so I was, really just an intern for 6 months. And then ultimately I was hired as an assistant art director on the op-ed page. And that's where I really learned to think visually. I mean, I began that in school. I say this to my students all the time, like your learning begins in your first job. I mean, I worked with so many greats in the field, and just to watch them solve problems, and or somebody like, I worked with Milton Glaser a couple times, and that guy has every right to like big time people, and he was just a complete pro. Like I had to call him. I remember he sent some sketches. I mean, he sent like five or six sketches for something, and we sent them to the editor, and they all got rejected. And Stephen Garnacha said, "Hey, will you call Milton and tell him we need a few more ideas?" I was like, Steven, I'm not telling Milton Glaser we need more ideas. Right. And he goes, today, I'll never forget this. He said, today you are not John Hendricks. Today you are the New York fucking Times. And the New York fucking Times needs some new sketches. So, you know what? I was terrified, but the guy, he's a total pro. He was like, yep, I got you. Yep, I'll, you know. So amazing. that was a real reminder that, like, you know, there's a kind of blue collar aspect to illustration that I really love.
Yeah. I had a similar-ish experience with Seymour Quast. I had him on the podcast, and I just expected every minute of it, every minute of the conversation for him to sort of like big time me in some way or think my questioning was stupid in some way. I don't know. I was expecting it. And maybe 3/4 of the way through the conversation, I was like, oh my God, we're actually having like a nice conversation.
Yeah. That guy's also another blue collar. Well, there was one time where Stephen was away. And so Seymour Quast was illustrating Frank Rich's column. We had to broker a meeting between them for some reason. And it wasn't contentious. It was just like, we need to hash out like the next season of columns. And Stephen was going to be gone. So he's like, hey, will you run this meeting between Frank Rich and Seymour Quast? I was like, that is insane.
How old were
you? And this
you?
Is what, oh, I mean, I was 26. I mean, I know. And this was like continually what would happen. Times is I would be asked to do these things that I had no business being a part of. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it was a very formative 3 years, that's for sure.
What's one thing that you learned from that experience that carried over into your illustration practice? Is it simply just the visualization of solutions?
Yeah, I mean, for sure, just the idea of that you can solve any problem very quickly with like taking two columns of visual things and like slamming them together. I saw Christoph Niemann do this all the time, just very quickly come up with a visual metaphor by just rotating through, kind of making every problem binary. You know, there's one column over here and there's one column over here, and we're just going to smash them together visually and see what happens. That and just, you know, being confident goes a long way. I mean, you end up doing things that are super cringy because, I wasn't actually confident. I was just pretending I was confident. You know, I was just saying, okay, I am going to go into this meeting. And so, I mean, I think back to some things that I did. I was like, oh my gosh, what a disaster that was. But, you know, I think you just jump in. You know, you just say, okay, I've been given this opportunity. Let's take a shot. And we'll see what happens.
Yeah. I think a lot of it has to do with just having a little bit of faith in yourself, in your own intelligence and abilities and taste and choices. And, you know, I think I talk about this all the time on the podcast, illustrators, just so many of these hurdles that they face, I think can be easily jumped if they just, and it's, I know it's hard to do, but just trust in their abilities, trust in themselves, because it's the answers, I think, and the ability is already there. They just don't believe that it is.
Yes, right. Yeah. And some of the, I mean, even when you talk to, it's funny, I've listened to a lot of illustrators describe like their big break, and almost every illustrator at some point is like, can't explain it. There was some like lucky thing that happened. I mean, I said it with the New York Times. It's just, there's no programming for it, but the thing that connects all those lucky breaks is like putting yourself out there over and over and over again and trying things maybe that you don't have the skills for, and then one of them lands, you know. And that's why it feels lucky, because there's no way to program that. You can't, like, students are like, hey, how do I become an illustrator? I don't tell them, well, go be an intern at the New York Times, right? But what I do say is you have to put yourself out there consistently. You can't wait for your work to arrive at some, you know, pre-planned idea. Nope. You just put it out there, good, bad, or ugly.
Yeah. I talk to illustrators all the time, and I get, you know, they'll say, am I ready? And it's a really hard question to ask. So like, it takes a bit of bravery to say to some essential, basically a stranger, like, am I ready? Is my work ready? But it's not like, is my work ready? Am I ready?
Yeah. Yeah.
And those are two completely different questions. Is the work ready? The answer usually is yeah. Yeah, it's ready. But it's only, the only reason it's ready is because it's never going to be ready. Like, it's never, there is no like actual defined line of pre-ready, post-ready. It's just, it's this, it's constantly evolving, this work that people do. And I think in terms of like their own humanity, their own, you know, how they perceive themselves and those kinds of struggles, you know, are you ready? Are you ready mentally? I mean, that's a whole other thing.
Well, I was sending out my work when I was in graduate school with, you probably have never seen some of my earlier work, but it was these dry brush acrylic paintings. And so I was sending that out along with my sketchbook work, like inside. So I would have like a few finished paintings and then page spreads for my sketchbook, because one of my spreads for my sketchbook got into American Illustration. It was the first annual I ever got in. But in my mind, that wasn't the real work. That was like a lark. And so I was promoting two very different things. And looking back, you know, that was that would never be something you would tell someone to do.
No.
But I was doing it, and people were pointing at the sketchbook and saying, this, I mean, I would call you for this. I don't know what the other stuff is. You know, Stephen Heller very directly said, you know, take out the Grant Wood, Chris Van Allsburg homage paintings and just show me the sketchbook stuff. And so, you know, the only reason I got that nugget from Stephen Heller is because I was willing to show him stuff that was very unfinished. And so that fear of like, will I get blacklisted because I don't know what I'm doing? You know, I just think you want to err on the side of taking a risk rather than waiting.
Yeah. Personally, I was ready years before my art was ready to do anything with it, you know, like showing it to anybody. I was definitely ready. I was ready in senior year of college, undergrad. I was like, yep, let's do this.
Exactly.
Submit, meet with, who do I have to meet with? But yeah, good Lord. I was ready to interview for jobs. Definitely. Maybe it's an Italian sort of bravado that, you know, whatever. I don't know what it is, but I was definitely ready. My art was far from ready. It was awful. But, you know.
Well, one of the early heartbreaks of my life where I thought, well, I had my chance and it was over, is I did not get into the Society of Illustrators student show while I was in undergrad. And I thought, well, you know, that's too bad. I thought I was going to have a career and now it's over, you know. So deciding that, you know, your chance to make it has come and gone at age 23, that's a very foolish assumption to make.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was because I was so eager to be successful, I did not learn that patience is absolutely required, or like a better word is like long suffering. Like if you want to do this, you have to have a long obedience in the same direction, right? And you have to be patient.
How many gold medals have you won from the society since then? Yeah, exactly.
Unfortunately, only one, but three silvers.
So, how many medals total?
Four. Yeah, four. That's pretty good.
Yeah. There you go. Turning our attention to God.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You've created books like Miracle Man, The Story of Jesus, Go and Do Likewise, The Parables and Wisdom of Jesus, The Faithful Spy, and so on. If I can use the terminology of the faithful, where did your relationship with God begin?
Oh, man, this is so fun to talk about. So I don't remember a time before drawing, and I also don't remember a time before I knew of Jesus. So I do not have a lot of people who are faithful. I have a very like exciting and stark conversion story. I do not have that.
You didn't fall off a horse and, you know, hold your arms up high as a light descended down upon you. Okay.
That's right. A donkey did not speak to me. There was no voice from the clouds.
No.
I would have loved that. Frankly.
Fiery shrub of some sort.
Oh, gosh. I would love a fiery shrub.
Yeah.
No, it's been a long, slow romance. And, you know, there have been seasons of doubt and despair and seasons of faith and certainty. But I think that is normal for anyone doing faith. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's. It was never my goal to make books with Jesus in it. I mean, that it's, in fact, my whole philosophy of art making as a Christian was that you do not have to make explicitly Christian works in order to be an artist who is also a Christian. And yet, in many ways, I feel like it is God dunking on me, because now almost all of my most popular works are theological or explicitly Christian. So, you know, shows what I know.
Yeah, I retired from Catholicism 25 years ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I'm being truthful, I would love to, I can't wait for the day when someone says, yeah, actually there is something called the Force, and that would blow my mind. Mm-hmm. But anyway, in the criticism department, people like to go after one's faith or lack of faith as a way to criticize something else about them, their intelligence or their upbringing or their political choices or what have you. Mm-hmm. You said that people are uncomfortable with people who are strongly motivated by religious ideas. End quote. Have you ever felt judged by others because of your faith? Have you ever had the sense that your faith made others, and by others I mean like colleagues, students, etc., uncomfortable?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a really good question. In many ways, first of all, places like Fox News have framed Christians being persecuted as some sort of like war on Christmas thing. Mm-hmm. So I want to make sure that I'm not aligning myself with that particular narrative. Mm-hmm. I think people are uncomfortable with religious belief and people who have religious belief for actually very, very good reasons. There are a lot of people who instrumentalize or even weaponize religious belief in relationships. And so people go into them and they're like, what is this going to be? Like, am I going to meet this person? And then after 2 days or two dates or hangouts with them, I'm going to get the gospel talk or something. You know, I mean, that's weird. Yeah. So I hope I don't make people feel that way. And I never talk with students about it unless they ask. But I just think that should be common sense with anything. I mean, I don't go in. I wouldn't want anyone to do that with me with, like, I don't know, they're super passionate about, you know, avocados or something. Like, if someone spoke about avocados every time you met them, you'd be like, I mean, that guy's nice, but he's like always talking about avocados, you know?
Yeah. Then you're like, oh, you must live in Brooklyn.
That's right. Excuse me. I'm sorry, millennials. I didn't mean to do that to you. But I will say there is a but. Living in the art world with a very out there faith that, mm-hmm. you know, I'm classified as an evangelical. I mean, that's a term that now has a political lens to it, sadly. Mm-hmm. But there's, you know, Orthodox biblical Christianity is evangelical. So that can be a minus. You know, there have certainly been projects I have, you know, well, like my church sketchbooks, for instance. There have been some publishers that over the years have been interested, but didn't realize that I was a sincere believer, and they were interested in them if they were sort of critiquing the church. So again, I don't really think that counts as some sort of persecution, but I will say that my religious books often do not get into illustration annuals. And I don't think it's because the work is any less skilled. I think it's just the content is a little uncomfortable for some people. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm not really angry about that. I mean, these are projects that I want to do.
Right.
But I do think the content matters more than we think it does.
Yeah. I mean, that clearly I think there's something there. Judging, you know, by the mm-hmm. tone of my questioning there, I don't know this for sure. And I feel on a side note, by the way, it is incredibly freeing when you can say, I don't know, and not feel like you're less than, you know, uh-huh. It's just, I think this world would be a far more improved place if everyone leaned into the idea that they don't know many things.
Yes.
But you know what? Maybe they do. Maybe they know everything and I just don't. So I'm going to say, I don't know if this is true. I feel that in the illustration world, like you just said, it, you know, if you're out there with your, especially with Christianity and other religions, it there's something there. I don't even know what it is. I don't even know how to explain it, but there's something there that maybe a bit of a judgmental slant on being outwardly faithful, outwardly religious from the illustration community.
And I think so. And I think it is.
Like, I hope I'm wrong. I'm not, you know, but.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I don't think it has anything to do with the illustration community. I think it is a modern Western phenomenon that we are an individualistic society. And to align yourself with a religious belief is to align yourself with a community, and a community that goes back 2,000 plus years, right?
Right.
And so to say that I am part of this stream of people who have believed these particular things for 2,000 years, it is not very individualistic. You know, it is almost like, you know, oh, well, you're just a sheep looking for comfort in the masses,
right.
You know? And so I think there's just a strain in our culture now of prioritizing the individual that kind of just naturally rejects things that are corporate like that, and not mm-hmm. corporate as in structure, but a business, but corporate as in fellowship. And so I think it can just sit weird with people. So
yeah.
I get that.
Yeah. I don't remember the illustrator's name. And even if I did, I wouldn't say it out loud because I'm not a psycho. But I worked with an illustrator once who, in a series of books, anytime any one of us worked with him, me or anyone on my design team or other art directors and their design teams worked with this illustrator, he put crosses into every spread. He like hid crosses in everything. Yeah, which I thought was
Well, and here's the other thing. Yeah. There is so much bad art that is made by Christians.
Yeah. Michelangelo.
Yes, that's right.
Sistine Chapel is trash.
That's right. I do a lecture. I have as you might imagine, a series of lectures about art in the church, and I have this slide where I put up the Sistine Chapel next to the Jesus nightlight, you know, like the and I'm like, which of these have comforted people in hours of distress more, you know? And I think you can argue that the Jesus nightlight has done more work from the Holy Spirit than the Sistine Chapel. But anyway, yeah, it is a fascinating thing. Like, when does religious art work and when is it just completely instrumentalized and flawed and derivative? And yeah
there we go. I think we've said enough about that to hopefully not upset anybody.
Okay.
Yeah. Speaking of faith and discomfort, let's talk a little bit about baseball.
Oh wow, great transition.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, discomfort on my part because I'm an Orioles fan and I don't think they've won since, you know, 2013. So it's been a while since they've won a game. For listeners who've suddenly gagged at the mention of sports, stick with us. John and I are going to talk about illustration, I promise you. Some of the greatest illustrators throughout history covered baseball. Norman Rockwell, mm-hmm. Bernie Fuchs, Robert Weaver.
Chris Payne, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. A few years back, I wrote a blog post about how baseball and illustration are remarkably similar. Remarkably similar. I asked a few illustrators to share their thoughts, you included. Among other insights, you said, quote, "I often imagine different projects I work on as plate appearances. Honestly, I don't know why this helps me as an illustrator, but it does. We work mm-hmm. on so many projects over the course of a career. One at bat doesn't determine the arc of our whole career. It reminds me that anyone, even a utility infielder, can run into a game-winning home run on an inside breaking ball. It also reminds me that even Stan Musial struck out looking, and I can too." End quote. Mm-hmm. Do you still feel that way?
Yeah. You know, it has been a while since I've read those thoughts. It's one of the things I love about baseball. Like, you know, the 2006 World Series MVP, you know, Cardinals won that year. I'm a Cardinals fan. Was David Eckstein, who, you know, was a scrappy utility infielder who just had, you know, like the game of his life, the series of his life. Mm-hmm. And I'm not Stan Musial. You know, I just know that I'm going to get a few good hits in my career, but I think early on, I very much wanted to be Mickey Mantle. And you know, I think understanding our limitations as people and the things that we do well is kind of the a good way to have a joyful life. So I think of the baseball metaphor a lot. You know, and it was an editor at another company I sent a book idea to who told me that, who said, you know what, this is okay. You're going to find your voice. You just need more plate appearances. I was like, yeah, you're right. You just go up and take another swing.
It is. I mean, I'm going to put the article in the show notes, but I mean, just off the top of my head, you fail more than you succeed.
Mm-hmm.
Baseball and illustration.
Mm-hmm.
Every now and then you hit a home run, but it's not the norm.
It's not
for anyone.
Yeah.
Usually, if you do get a hit, it's going to be a single or a double, maybe a triple. But more than not, on a day-to-day basis, and it's in a long game. It's every single day. You do your thing. You go to bed. You wake up the next day. You do the exact same thing. And some days you go 4-for-4. Some days you go 0-for-4. Some days you hit four home runs the next day, like in terms of like creation, sketching, painting. The next day you strike out 4 times. It's unbelievably similar. And I just always feel like, I worry a little that illustrators feel that they have to be, instead of going, you know, instead of hitting 300, which is failing 70% of the time, they have to hit 700, failing only 30% of the time. And I just that shift in perspective would go a long way to helping a lot of illustrators breathe a little easier.
Yeah, I do think young people today coming out, social media is a real gift for promotion, but it is also a problem for, I think, the way we frame how other people succeed. I think social media allows us to believe that there are just geniuses out there that have it, and I don't have it, let's say. Mm-hmm. And I think it overvalues that genius culture and undervalues progression and work and persistence. And it's just not the way the world works. You get better by doing it. You get better by working, by showing up every day at the ballpark and taking batting practice, to extend the metaphor. But you know, it's so easy to get, I get discouraged. I flip through Instagram. I'm like, look at all these people. Like, why should I even try? And I think the practicality of the way our field works is through iteration and practice, you know, and that's how you get better and figure out who you are.
Wow. We could end it right there and that'd be amazing. but let's end it right here. Remembering that there are folks listening to this episode, hopefully they're baseball fans. And if they're not, it's okay too. Maybe some of them have lost a little faith in their work or in the idea that they will achieve their creative goals. What would you like to say to them directly?
Well, okay. One thing I love about illustration is that it is a career that is really possible for people. There is no one that wins illustration, right? In baseball, there's winners, there's MVPs, there's a definitive metric to measure how good you are. And it's one of the reasons why I love drawing as a field, is there, you feel like I have to have a certain amount of skill to succeed, but you can look across the world of illustration and picture making, and there is a level of craft or craftsmanship or skill in every category of drawing or making or writing. You look at Marjan Satrapi's work, are those skillful drawings? I mean, they are, but they're not Michelangelo drawings, right? There is a way to make drawings that is yours, that is completely yours, that can find an audience out there. It's the kind of thing that can feel like, well, I'm never going to do this. I'm never going to succeed. If you're not looking for a particular outcome, but just enjoy the process. This is what my book Drawing is Magic was about. Like you have to connect joy to making on a daily basis to sustain what it takes to make art over 10, 20, 30 years, right? So always enjoy the process, not just the outcome.
To learn more about John, visit johnhendricks.com. If you enjoyed our conversation, please share it with your friends, subscribe to the podcast, and provide a positive rating and review. Become a patron by visiting patreon.com/DEPT. In return, you'll receive our soft enamel pin, a reusable discount code for 10% off, and access to patron-only episodes we're calling Extra Credit. This podcast is produced by the Illustration Department, a global leader in online education for illustrators. Visit us at illustrationdept.com for class offerings, testimonials, the alumni showcase, the podcast show notes, our forum, the bookshop, and more. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.